the training in economic discipleship based around 10 biblical principles of kingdom economics. This will be delivered with 30 podcasts or MP3s, beginning with a one-day or two-day consultation and finishing with a reporting back one day where you bring back your stories based on your evaluation. This podcast is about cash flows in an urban poor church plant. What finances are needed at each step of the development of a church plant? This podcast is best if you watch the PowerPoint alongside the podcast, as some of the ideas are easier seen with a graphic. So if you can find a computer and do that, that may be helpful. The question we have to ask is, how do you fund a church plant among the urban poor so it ends up as a healthy, developing church plant? And is that the same across different countries? Is it different? And the interesting thing is we'll find the same progressions and somewhat of a similar economic levels are needed in these different countries. The figures I'm using are a little bit older, back in 2003. The cost of living in most cities has increased, doubled at least since that time. So we begin with the slide number two and the question of how the church plant progresses. And initially, it begins with a church planting team, which may well be a group of very enthusiastic volunteers who self-fund their entrance into the community, some of whom begin to live there at their own expense. And so in slide number two, you can see the early phase of capitalization is self-employment. Now, it may be that there's a denominational backing where there's some funding for a church planter. This is helpful to get the thing moving. And it may be that there's an external resource from a businessman in the city. If so, it can accelerate the process. Evangelism then occurs and people start coming to the Lord. And as a worship service begins to form, it's very critical that as Bible studies form, in each Bible study, people contribute a coin. It may not be more than a coin, but a simple gift so they get into the habit of giving even before they become Christians. And then as the church forms, a habit of giving and teaching about tithing becomes part of the nature of the church, but that teaching ought not to be oppressive, but facilitate a generous spirit. The next phase in there is as people grow in discipleship, their lives begin to change, and they tend to get better jobs, to have more stable families, and to manage their finances better. This is part of the discipling process. There are less fights within the families. Life is more stable, and God's hand of blessing is on them. So as the congregation grows to 40 or 50, 50 to 80, there's not enough necessary to fully fund a pastor, nor a church building, nor community development. And so the pastor has to continue to work part-time. As the church grows beyond that to about 300, 200 to 300, 300 to 600, then there may be sufficient to support the cost of, first of all, renting a building, secondly, pastor's salary, thirdly, the actual running, the administration of the ministry, and the physical needs, meeting the physical needs of some of the community. So it's really in that order, the rent for the building, the pastor's salary, some aspects of running the ministry, and at all points, the church is constantly meeting the needs of the poor. So the pastor has a tricky differential here because he's got to provide for himself, and yet the money is being given also for the poor. That requires some degree of accountability, and so the formation of a deacon's group helps in this process. Now, slide number four, the critical issue for sustainability is the buying of land for a church of about 120 or so. House churches are not sustainable in the slums. There's too much social pressure. The neighbors get upset with the noise. They don't provide a basis either for committed community development. Now, when I say the buying of land for a church, in reality, the better approach is to buy land for a community center. Once the church has capitalized the buying of the land, then they can physically begin some initial construction, and the former rent is being used to pay off the cost of the land, the cost of construction, and some towards the pastor, some towards ministry costs. Even though the land may not be formally owned, there are rules within the slums themselves as to who are the legal tenants on the land, and it allows some kind of semi-formal purchase. And sometimes there is land just outside of the slum which can be bought more formally. One way of doing this is to actually develop a preschool or a primary school. And then the building is well used during the week and can be used for the church on Sunday. This goes well together. Now, there's a common fallacy that because evangelism has occurred then and people are worshiping, then the church has been planted, but it hasn't. There's just an entrance point. There's a preaching point. It's not a fully formed church. Slide number five, number four, from church to community transformation. The next steps really are ones of self-sufficiency. If the pastor is working with key leaders to help them become successful in the business, so if he's teaching economic discipleship, helping them in their business ideas, if the church is working to develop a ROSCA or an ESCA, a rotating savings scheme, a credit community organization, a credit cooperative, or potentially microfinance, but that comes later. Really, it's the savings, which is a critical element. Then this increases the amounts that people can contribute to the church and helps the church get to a more sustainable base. And once leaders are formed, then you begin to have a resource in terms of leadership. So the possibility of elders and deacons being engaged in community development that is significantly changing the community is there. And at that point, and not before that point, foreign funding can be useful in terms of the community development and engagement with the community. If we look at an example from Kenya, Nairobi in Kenya is the beginning of the church, the church funding team. There's some capital from the denomination of $65 a month. The church planting team is self-employed. They're not necessarily fully employed. There's some underemployment there, but they're employed. And there's still untapped capital from businessmen, which could have pushed them a bit further. The evangelism created enough resources of people and tithes. So within the community, people are giving $5 to $10 a month for a congregation of 50. And then there comes a point where they were able to buy the land and build their own building according to local design. So at this point, as the elders and the deacons are being trained, tithes are increasing up to $15 to $20 per month for a congregation of about 100. At that point, skills development through microfinance capital for church members was brought in. And their initial loans were about $100, but this increased their capacity in business. And that's what really facilitated the increase in tithing. And the land rent originally was $5 a month. The cost to buy was $2,000 for a 10 by 15 foot. And so they were able to expand that building every year, $1,000, keeping expanding 10 by 15 feet till eventually there is a community of several hundred worshiping in this church. Foreign funding at that point was brought in terms of community development programs in the community. So that's an example from Kenya. Another example from Mumbai, India, very similar, $100 a month salary from denomination. Self-employment, now 28% of people are underemployed. And there was some capital from businessmen that went into the denominational support. The land rent is $20 a month, and it cost them $2,000 for the first 10 by 15 foot. And again, they could expand. In an older slum in Mumbai, the cost, because there's construction going, the cost to buy at that point was $20,000. And in one case, we were able to do that from a businessman, from a foreigner businessman. And then about $20,000 construction costs, which the church then invested. Okay, so very similar kind of situation. A lot depends on how well developed a slum is, what the cost is, but that goes also with the people having more work in a more developed slum. In Manila, the difference here, land and building rent about $4,000 per month. A 20 by 20 foot room, 200,000 pesos at this particular time. And these are more established slums. And so tithes increased as the microfinance developed. Size increased to about 3,000 to 5,000 pesos per month for a congregation. And that was accelerated by the skills development program. But also the churches in Manila, most of the church plants are associated with a school. And so they are actually school plants as well as church plants. This sometimes helps the one and sometimes helps the other financially, but in overall, it's a good use of a building and it gives a credibility within the community and usually provides a role for the pastor's wife or for some leaders within the congregation as teachers, so that increases employment within the church. Now, if we looked at time frames for this kind of progression, it takes about 5 to 6 years to develop this progression into real effective community development, to develop a progression where the church has got stable leadership, where the pastor is funded sufficient to survive, where there is a piece of land where they're able to start building and they've built some of the church building, where they've been able to set up a community center which is doing school. School is there, and there's also some degree of community engagement, some kind of community development programs. So a brief overview of what it costs to establish churches. Thank you. So this leads to the question of the relationship between righteousness and achievement. There's a saying by Ralph Waldo Emerson, a dollar is not value, but representative of values and at last of moral values. And isn't it true every transaction we make with money is a moral transaction? So throughout our whole lives, and we make many thousands of transactions, we always have to test our motives to make sure we are righteous. So entrepreneurship involves an important set of character values, and knowing the God of the Scriptures is critical to developing them. Not knowing Him means the values become distorted. The whole of the Old Testament is a panorama of examples of the principles of this kind of principle. In Leviticus 26, we see that hard work plus God's blessing brings prosperity. And then we see the curses. Hard work without God's blessing brings economic disaster for a nation. So the land is fruitful, and we're to work to obtain its fruits, but it's not impersonal, it's ordered by God. It follows well-defined laws, but the Lord can bless our use of those laws, and He can multiply our work a hundredfold as He blessed Abraham and Jacob and Isaac. So we need to teach of the blessing of God on the work of our hands. Now, is this a prosperity gospel? I don't think so. The prosperity gospel says if you give, God will bless, which is also true. But it says if you give to me, God will bless, which is not true. And there's no magic equation. If you give more and more, that God will bless more and more. It's each according to his own relationship to God. But what is clear is if we follow the principles of the Scripture in obedience, not just giving, but in obedience to the principles, then there will be the blessing of God. In another lesson, we want to take now this principle of creativity, innovation, and entrepreneurship and connect it to the theme of cooperative economics. And if we put these two themes together, what does this tell us?